Hey guys, welcome back to Go Down the Rabbit Hole. We've been playing this episode for so long and are so excited to finally record it. This is an episode Sam and I really put a lot of thought and planning into, so we can't wait for you guys to listen to Season 3, Episode 3, The Revival of the Rom-Com.
Romantic comedies are probably by far my favorite kind of movie to watch. I feel like they just are such feel-good movies, and every time it's just like the perfect people in it, like the strangest circumstances, and like by the end, like the happy ending is just so like rewarding. But Jenna, what's your favorite rom-com?
Okay, this is definitely a tough one because first of all, I totally agree. I love a good rom-com. I feel like it's my go-to movie to put on when I'm trying to watch something. It's always comforting. It's like I could rewatch the same rom-com a million times and never get sick of it. But okay, this is kind of a basic one that I feel like a lot of people love, but it really is my favorite. I would say How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is just so iconic. First of all, love Matthew McConaughey so much, and Kate Hudson, I believe, is the girl lead in it, and it's just such a feel-good to me. I remember the first time I watched that movie, I was, like, instantly obsessed. I've probably seen it, like, 20 times, but it never gets old, even if I know every single part that's gonna happen. They don't make rom-coms like that anymore. But Sam, how about you? Like, what's your favorite?
Yeah, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is so good. My favorite, I think, I also watched it recently, and, like, I, like, go through phases of just, like, watching it over and over again, is 13 Going on 30. Even though it's definitely more of, like, a coming-of-age style rom-com, I just love, like, the weird circumstance of Jennifer Garner, like, starting at 13 and immediately just, like, waking up one day being 30 and wondering where the time went and where, like, her best guy friend, like, disappeared off to, only to find out that he's engaged to another woman and her finally realize that, like, he was the one that she actually, like, wanted. Just so good. And also, like, the Y2K style, like, it's just, like, it's such a cool atmosphere and, like, world to watch, and like I'm just obsessed with that like time period, and the comedy then was just so much better than it like has been recently. So I like honestly can't even think of what the last like really good rom-com I saw was.
I know, I'm trying to think like what was the last really good rom-com I saw, and I feel like my mind always circles back to the early 2000s ones that are like iconic. You know, you think of all the iconic ones. I think of one of my other favorite rom-coms is 10 Things I Hate About You. I just recently watched it again. Amazing. Like, so good. And I just think about it, there's obviously so many rom-coms on all these streaming platforms that, like, you go to the category and you see all these ones that, like, literally the same thing in different fonts, but they just don't hit the same like the classics do. And honestly, here and there, you'll find a good one. I remember that time we watched, what was the one called with Lucy Hale, The Hating Game?
Yeah.
That was pretty good, honestly, for a rom-com that, like, is only on a street. Like, I don't know if it was ever in theaters, but that was really good. It pleasantly surprised me. But besides that, I mean, I don't know. When was the last time you really saw a good rom-com that wasn't, like, old?
I think I saw one with, I don't even, like, really remember. But the last one I saw in theaters was, like, What Men Want, I think. And it was all about, like, if this one woman could hear, like, all of men's thoughts. And, like, it was fine. Like, it was funny, but, like, I don't think I ever watched it again after seeing it. But as for streaming, the only one that, like, I was obsessed with was, like, Love, Rosie, which is, a, like, made by, I think, like, a British filmmaker. And then Set It Up. That was, like, the last really good one with Glenn Powell and Zoe Dutch, which we'll get into more about Glenn. But, like, a lot of those ones, it's just, like, it's a fun movie to watch, like, at home, but it just is kind of, like, a one-and-done, kind of, like, I watched it, and, like, yeah, that made me feel good, but, like, I'm not obsessed with it. But I feel like with, like, rom-coms, like, there has been such a gap in the marketplace since the early 2000s, like, successes, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, like, 10 Things I Hate About You, like, all of these, like, really iconic films with, like, such great people in them. Like, there's just been such a gap, and I don't know if it's audience based, like, not wanting to see that, but, like, it's just been missing for a really long time, and I think all these, like, little streaming ones have kind of missed the mark a little bit, and that's why, like, it hasn't been in theaters as often.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, kind of circling back to the whole reason we wanted to make this episode, Sam and I, of course, just saw the new movie, Anyone But You, and Sam's seen it a lot more times than I have, but it's now in Prime, by the way, so everyone go watch it if you haven't yet. We'll be watching that again and again. But that rom-com is honestly so good, and I feel like that's really what sparked this episode for us, because that was, like, the first rom-com I've seen in so long, and I was like, wow, this is one of those ones that's for sure going to be a classic. This is, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, but now, and it just was produced so well. Like, I mean, we'll go into what we really think makes the best, like, rom-com, and Sam and I did some research, and we're going to talk about the 9 elements that are in all great rom-coms, but we really were just inspired by that movie, and we're going to get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, so shout out to screencraft.org. That's, like, a really great resource for screenwriters or people who, like, love learning about movies. But we found this list online on screencraft.com, the 9 elements of all great rom-coms. So I'll just run through all of these really quick. Number 1, 2 lovable leads. Number 2, a meet-cute. Number 3, a unique, troublesome situation. Number 4, at least one great sidekick. Number 5, a super fun montage. Number 6, a relationship in jeopardy. Number 7, the light bulb moment. And the example that they used was when Harry realizes that he should be with Sally. Number 8, a grand gesture or epic line. And number 9, a happy ending. So those are, like, the 9 general elements that blog and just, like, really people in general who study these kind of things believe that all rom-coms have. And if you look back on, like, all the classics, like When Harry Met Sally, they all have every single one of these elements in them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's so interesting, like, just looking at this, because you could already, like, when you're looking at this list, you're going through it, I could immediately think of how each, like, point or, like, each number or whatever relates to Anyone But You specifically. And, of course, all these other movies too. But honestly, this movie has just felt like, it's been really inspiring in a weird way, because rom-coms have this, like, nostalgic feel, I feel like, for a lot of us, especially because I think most of us can agree that we haven't really felt like there was a good one since we were younger or since the first time we watched a classic one. So it's just really nice, like, watching these movies. It's so nostalgic. It makes you feel a certain way. Like, you leave the theater and you just feel so happy. And honestly, I think it was super smart, too, for Anyone But You, how they released it in theaters and it wasn't just, like, put on a streaming platform, because I think that really helped it out, honestly. I think that it really contributed to how well that it did in theaters. I mean, Sam, you know, like, the actual numbers of how well that did and everything, but yeah.
So I mean, I read a lot about, like, this, because for those of you listening, I, like, study TV and film, and, like, this is, like, my favorite thing to talk about ever. But Anyone But You had a budget of $25 million, and international gross has made about $200 million. Rom-coms are not that, like, expensive to make. It's really just, like, the locations and, like, the talent usually that costs the most money, because typically it's not the most, like visual effects heavy. Like, you don't really need all of that stuff. But this movie came out December 22nd and has already grossed $200 million based off of a $25 million budget, which is insane, like, for a rom-com, especially one that came out in theaters. Like, streaming, like, we don't actually get the numbers from the streamers about how, like, much something quote-unquote would have made, but, like, compared to some of the other movies that have been released, Madame Web, what else, like, recently, like, this surpassed expectations by a billion. It's, like, at least what I've gathered from reading, like, all of the trades. But, yeah, I think we should maybe go through all of the elements of this movie, see if it matches with Screencraft's list of all the elements required for a great rom-com, because, like you said before, I see all of it without even having to really think about it.
Yeah, I mean, starting off, 2 lovable leads. How can you not love Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney? I feel like they are 2 iconic actors, actresses. They really just, I feel like that is a big draw to seeing it. So many people love the 2 of them. And at least for me, I love their acting, but also they worked really well as, like, the pair of the movie. Like, they worked well being the love interest. I think they really sold the connection and it was just super good. So, I mean, that one's obvious. And then, like, the meet cute, I would say.
Add stuff to that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. For the lovable leads, they, like, their chemistry was so great. But I think the one of the other reasons why this did so good is Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney neither have really had, like, lead roles until this. They've always been kind of like a supporting character, or like on a TV show, like her on Euphoria and like him in Top Gun Maverick. Like, they were kind of like the really cool, like, side, like, characters that everybody, like, really liked and, like, wanted more of. And I think giving them, like, a chemistry driven huge, like, platform like this, like, not only is going to make them skyrocket the way it already has, but, like, that, like, you put two of the most appealing people in Hollywood right now on the rise in, like, one movie where they fall in love and, like, have insane chemistry, like, of course it's going to be, like, so successful.
Yeah, definitely. And then, obviously, next, the meet cute. I mean, that was an iconic scene for sure. The coffee shop where she had to pee. And, I mean, okay, first of all, disclaimer, there may be some spoilers in here. I can't promise. So, like, beware. But also, rom-coms, it's not really, like, you know how it's going to end. So I feel like that doesn't really matter. But anyways, the coffee shop scene was just so cute. Immediately, like, it happened super early on in the movie, too. And, again, obviously check that off the list. It was a great scene.
Yeah, great scene. And then three, a unique, troublesome situation. So they spend the night together. Nothing really happens. They fall asleep talking after they see each other in the coffee shop. And then wake up and she leaves before you can wake up and realizes, oh, she messed up. She shouldn't have left. So she goes back, but overhears him kind of like trash talking her, saying she was a mess. And she leaves. So they basically both end on bitter terms. And then, so that's their unique situation. But then the troublesome situation starts to kick in when they find out that, like, her sister and his best friend are dating and are engaged, and they have to go to their wedding in Australia and are forced to, like, avoid hating each other for the better of, like, the people they care about who are getting married. So it meets that. Check that off the list.
Yeah. And then next, for at least one great sidekick. I feel like there was multiple in this movie. I mean, honestly, the couple getting married, like her sister and his best friend, they were great sidekicks. I mean, they were also part of the whole plan of trying to get them together, because that was a whole part of the movie, which we could dive into a little bit later. And then, of course, there's, like, other characters too. Even the guy,
the
Australian guy and his, like, ex, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there were some funny characters, of course, like the parents too. I just think overall, yes, everyone did an excellent job playing their role, and the characters were perfectly, like, even the side characters were perfectly set up to make the movie what it was. So again, check that off the list. And then next we had the super fun montage, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, once they get to Australia, we, like, get to see them drive through, like, the, like, beautiful setting of Sydney, and, like, it's just, it's gorgeous. Like, I feel like there were multiple even in this. Like, they're not super, super long. But, like, it's really just, like, a bit world-building montage. Like, you can check that off the list multiple times.
Of course, every rom-com, I feel like, is going to be sprinkled with a little bit of cheesiness, because that's kind of in the name of the game. Like,
it's what makes it good.
It's what makes it good, but it wasn't, like, to me, I wasn't watching this and I was like, oh, like, this is a cheesy, like, if you like cheesy, you'll like it. Like, no, like, there's going to be a little bit of cheese, whatever, because that's how it is. But it was nothing like that. So that was great. And then relationship in jeopardy. I mean, that whole movie is kind of about that when you think about it. Like, yeah, this couple, like, they liked each other at first and then they hated each other and then they had to, like, force like each other. And then they pretended to date to, like, not cause any more havoc on the already, like, stressed couple getting married, who are, like, people they care about. And then that happened, and then I think they slept together again, but this time he left, and that kind of trouble in paradise all over again. So I mean, there was multiple moments, I would say, that this really happened. What do you think?
I would say, like, in Jeopardy is, like, right before they, like, realize that they, like, actually have feelings for each other, because they're kind of, like, in the moment of, like, faking their relationship and feel, and then, like, realizing that there might be, like, some other stuff there. And, like, I think, like, when she falls off of the boat is, like, kind of when, like, that's, like the tipping point, which can kind of lead into number seven, the light bulb moment, when they are, like, there's, like, this is, like, this movie has, like, two little light bulb moments. Like,
I know.
When they fall off the boat and they, like, are both together, and like she tells him how she like quit law school and he like had jumped in to save her, like they both realize in that moment that they do have feelings for each other, and that's like when they get home and then they like sleep together and then like have this like romantic night. But I guess even maybe this could be the relationship in jeopardy when she says like everything I'm doing feels like a mistake. Yeah. And they're back to the beginning when he sneaks out on her and their relationship, like they just put all their feelings out there. He just did. And then she says that one thing about like feeling like everything she's doing is a mistake. Their like relationship, then they finally cleared it up a little, is in jeopardy. So it kind of like has like a light bulb moment there. But I would say like once she sees him kiss Margaret at the wedding is her light bulb moment, because yeah, he realizes like when he jumps in. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you think.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I think it's hard for this one. Obviously, it checks it off completely, but there's multiple moments. Like something I was thinking about when her parents invited her like ex-fiance or whatever, mm-hmm, over, that was kind of like a weird moment because he was starting to get a little jealous, you could see, and even she was like, it was just, that was like a little moment that started it too. And then I also was thinking, because of course, even when they were faking the relationship, like he had the goal of trying to get back with Maggie, mm-hmm, right? So like there was that moment when they had to pick up the wedding cake. It was like B and Maggie.
Yeah.
And she was like, do you care if I like make a move on him? Like whatever. And that was also a light bulb moment in a way, because you could tell she was getting jealous. And she's, mm-hmm, like, wait, like you're going to make a move on him. So, I mean, there was a bunch of like mini light bulb moments, but I would say yes, the next, yeah, biggest one is for sure when she sees him kiss her. And then, yeah, I mean, that leads also to the like, grand gesture, I guess.
Yeah. But also I think what made this movie really good and what like separates it from the cheesiness is that like, yeah, it has all of those like things, that all the elements we've covered so far, but it's not just like one, it's like multiple that like build off of each other.
Definitely. And I think to add to that too, it's like what I really what really resonated with me about this movie was it felt more real than like past rom-coms. Like for instance, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, love that rom-com. Of course it could happen, like it was a great plot, like, you know, she is writing an article and then she ends up falling for him, the whole article is about how to lose a guy and all the things girls do wrong, whatever. But like going to this movie, it's very interesting because I don't know, I was kind of watching it and it really relates to our current, like, trend with relationships and situationships and everything. And it just felt very real for, like, today's reality of relationships. I felt very much like there was a lot of moments that so many of us could relate to. And also, it felt real because it wasn't a perfect relationship. It was very messy. And that's the reality of a lot of relationships. And I think that's why it kind of escaped the cheesiness aspect, because it was, like, real and it had messy and it wasn't some perfect, like, I think, I remember the first time I watched it, there was some moments where I kind of expected, I was like, oh, this is it. Like, for instance, when he jumped in after, I was like, oh my God, they're already, like, realizing they like each other. Like, I was like, that's it. But then I was like, no, there's so much more after that where they, like, get mad at each other and then they like each other again. And it's, like, a whole thing. So I think that's what really makes it good, you know?
Yeah. And, like, those, like, little light bulb moments. I think the best part about it was that, like, they both had it almost at different times. Like, it took 100%. It took both of them reaching that. But then after that, obviously, we have number 8, the grand gesture or epic line. And obviously, like, that's when he jumps off of the cliff into the water, yep, getting Harbor Rescue to bring him his moving train. And if you've seen it, you get that.
Yeah.
To go find her because he knows that she's people watching at the Opera House.
Mm-hmm. And it's, that part is also super important because, like, that was something she kind of said earlier on. It was, like, a little Easter egg almost. I mean, I don't know if Easter egg's the right word, but she said it earlier on and it's something, like, he remembered, like, because I remember when he realized and they were, like, she saw you kissing Maggie, whatever, and they were, like, I don't know where she went, like, but he remembered what she said to him and how it was supposed to be a date, too, and he, like, told her when they were in the water together on the little, like, buoy thing. He was like, oh, we'll go together. And so that was just an overall, definitely the grand gesture, the biggest one, I think. I mean, again, like you said, Sam, what makes it so good, I think, is there was multiple moments where, like, it kind of checks off multiple times each of these, like, 9 elements. And some people might think, oh, the grand gesture was, like, him jumping in the water after, and that was kind of part of it. But I think that was definitely the biggest one. I mean, even I feel like we're forgetting about, like, some of the parts where when they first get lifted up and she starts singing Unwritten, mm-hmm, because she overheard it when they were on the plane and, you know, she's like reaching over. Yeah. that whole moment, and she heard it in his headphones. So I think it's very good. Like, I cannot speak more highly. I just keep, like, reminiscing on my first time watching it.
Yeah. And then, like, obviously at the end, like, they end up together. It's a happy ending. But it's, like, I don't know. I think what you said about it being, like, a modern, like, Shakespearean romance, which we'll get a little bit more into, but, like, the way, like, they get back together, he's like, I didn't kiss Margaret, she kissed me. Like, it's messy, like, and that's relatable to people. This isn't cheesy to the point where it's like, you're the only one for me. He spent half this time feeling jealous about his ex-girlfriend and then realized that, like, the person he actually wanted to be with was right in front of him. Like, I loved that aspect of it because it's so, like, realistic. And then their happy ending is, like, finally when they kind of just, like, have meet on common ground after, like, everything that they've been through. And I just realized the montage really does happen at the end with Unwritten. True. Like, that's where the montage happens. Like, that's, like, also kind of different than I think some of the ones we've seen in the past, even the early 2000s ones, which I kind of liked, because sometimes the montages can get kind of, like, long in the end. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just this one in particular, and, like, pretty much every rom-com that's been iconic, like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, like, those kind of classics, like, people don't really realize it until you're told, but Anyone But You is based off of Much Ado About Nothing by William Shakespeare, and most of those rom-coms that, like, are so iconic are based off of, like, Shakespearean plots because it's in, like,
the public domain. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's so interesting because I don't remember. I think I saw this on TikTok and that's how I found out about that, but I was, like, looking into something and I heard about that recently and I had no clue, honestly, that that was a thing. But it makes so much sense. One, they're in the public domain. You could use it however. But two, like, Shakespeare is literally the epitome of romance and all, like, the crazy and infamous Shakespeare stories you hear. Like, it's really just remakes of that and new renditions of it.
This is a really good modern retelling of a very old but very classic Shakespearean love story. And, like, you think about, like, all of the, like, even TV shows, like, star-crossed lovers, like, that idea of Romeo and Juliet, that is the epitome of, like, I could think of, like, a Disney Channel movie that is based off of Romeo and Juliet, Teen Beach Movie, Layla and Tanner, True. Surfers versus Bikers, like, it's all, like, all of these stories are pretty much tied into just the classic tales of, from Shakespeare, which is really interesting because, like, it's all there. It's just about finding new ways to make it, like, finding new ways to tell that story through, like, a modern lens and, like, make it unique to the time.
Yeah, definitely. Even something that I was thinking about, too, is, you know, obviously the song Unwritten was so, like, important to the plot line. And, like, it was, like, a cheesy thing, but it was, like, it made the whole thing. And, you know, they had that song playing, like, multiple times throughout the movie. And, of course, it was kind of in the montage at the end, too. But that's so nostalgic for me because I know in, like, elementary school, that song was, like, I don't know. I don't remember. I feel bad that I don't know this. I don't remember exactly when that song came out. But I just know I did listen to it a lot when I was, like, the elementary school age, like, maybe, like, fifth grade. And that was so popular. It was on all those, like, karaoke games that you would have on the Wii and everything. And in a way, this movie even brought back that song because I have known that song forever. But when was the last time I listened to it? Could not tell you until this movie came out. And now I'm like, I hear that song and it just makes me happy and it makes me think of the movie. And that's something special about rom-coms too. Like when they are, you know, successful and they're really well produced, it has that effect on you. And even what you're saying about the Shakespeare, like the modern lens of it, I think it's amazing what like these movies can do. And as people like us who admire film and admire writing and producing, like, this is really cool to look at.
Yeah. And I think also what you said about Unwritten, I think they were, like, the producers and, like, the director and writer were listening to, like, the, like, people who noticed the gap in the industry because, like, that's an early 2000s Y2K, like, classic song. And this is a modern movie. And when did the last really, really great rom-coms happen prior to this? The early 2000s. So they, like, brought some of that back into this. But when Glenn Powell and Sidney are doing the like Titanic thing on the boat and she's like, come on, old man, and he goes, this is so cringe. Like obviously, like, I guess being Gen Z now, that's kind of like a weird thing to say, but like I still say cringe. And like she calls him so, like, he's like, this is so cringe. And she goes, so is saying cringe, old man. Like, now it's kind of weird because I feel like, that's the first time I felt my lingo being made fun of.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. This, like, honestly, felt like a new, like, generational build in film in general. Just, I feel like this reached out the most to Gen Z.
100%. And obviously, like, something I was just thinking about, too, you know, when the whole Barbie Oppenheimer, when that came out, that was, of course, a really big thing. And that was talked about a lot. But I feel like this is also, like, a step up from that even. Because, of course, like, Barbie was very relatable. And it was honestly a deeper movie. Like, obviously, that wasn't a rom-com. But that was, like, it had a lot of deeper meanings and everything. And that obviously performed so well, too. But to your point, Sam, like, this movie really touched, like, really resonated with Gen Z specifically. And I feel like it's been really rare, honestly, that I've seen a movie, like, not even just a rom-com, like, any movie that's come out recently where I'm like, wow, it has, like, Gen Z, like, our lingo is now being written into movies. Like, you know, our parents see the early 2000s movies and they're like, oh my god, like, that's, like, in a way, like, they resonated with it because it uses their stuff. But this is the first time it's really happening to us. And I'm like, wow, we're getting old. But also, it's, like, it's cool to see.
Yeah, no, completely. And just one last thing to wrap this up that I, like, totally forgot to write down, but I just remembered, like, another way this completely reached Gen Z audiences and, like, early millennials is, like, the music in it. Mac Miller, they had, like, all of these, like, classic songs just, like, that we're so used to hearing, but it was scored so, so well. And, like, the way that they inserted, like, the music, like, when The Spins by Mac Miller starts, it's right when she's, like, leaving his apartment upset classic at him, and it transfers, like, I don't know, like, you know, like, some of those, like, sounds that just, like, hit your ear a different way. When it switches from, like, just playing over everything to, like, playing in the club that they're at, like, I don't know who wrote that in, like, whose idea exactly that was, but it was so, so good. And, like, this just was, like, it clearly, like, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think definitely we hit a lot of points, we've talked about a lot, but overall, clearly, if you can't tell already, Sam and I love this movie. And now that it's on Prime, we will be watching on our flight next week for spring break. But we had a lot of fun planning this episode and just talking about it. It's very interesting. I feel like this is a little different than what we normally talk about, but, you know, it also resonates to the whole, like, lifestyle aspect of why also one of the reasons we do this podcast, too. I mean, it's so relatable and honestly just really fun thing to talk about. So,
yeah, I don't know about you, Jenna, but I am hoping to see a lot more movies like this. I hope it's not going to, like, oversaturate, like,
plateau
and then plateau again like it did. Like, I feel like this needs to be like the bare minimum that, yes, other people reach. And, like, I don't know, like, what the next thing's gonna be, but we really hope you guys enjoyed listening to this. We know it was different, but stay tuned for our episodes coming up. We're going on spring break and we have some really fun ideas to capture there.
Yes. All right, bye guys.
Bye.